Okay, ladies and gentlemen, good morning. Welcome here on a Friday, and we've saved the very best to the last part of the week, and I'm delighted that we can do this. Vice President Navarro, Luis Navarro, thank you for coming. We're delighted. You are a familiar and beloved figure here in Washington. You've devoted a lot of your own personal life to this, the heartbeat of this city, and of course we welcome you back with a great deal of confidence and frankly affection. And it's really great to have you back. And I was talking to Ambassador Humbert, who said, this has been a challenging time to keep up with the Vice President when he comes to Washington, because he's got so many networks and so many contacts and so many things to do. It was already an overly subscribed program, and then of course the Vice President's added a lot more. So it's been a busy time, and we're very grateful that didn't crowd out the opportunity for you to meet with us. We really are very pleased to have a chance to hear you today. This is an exciting thing. If you think about it, the Panama Canal was really the moonshot of the last century. It was that big, and it had that transforming an event in the life of the world. It also was a very formative experience for our two countries. And we were talking about having good relations between our two countries. It's not always been good, but it has been positive. And it's worked out very well because of the leadership of Vice President Luis. And, of course, he comes from a family that's been deeply involved in the modern development of Panama and the development of these very rich and mutual relations between our two countries. And I think we now have that. There was once a time when we had a very paternalistic relationship, and that's in the past. We now welcome the foreign minister to Washington to tell us about what this country is going to do for the world and how it's going to help us. And that's a welcome thing. I think that's a very good thing for us. So we're delighted you're here, foreign minister and vice president. It is an exciting time for us. We're going to hear a lot about this exciting new project. It's going to be great for America, and we know it'll be good for Panama. Thank you so much for coming today. We turn the platform to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, John, and I really want to start by thanking you for this great opportunity, thanking Ambassador Peter DiCiasso, a good old friend of Panama and personally, for this great opportunity. I know that for all of you, although it's an interesting subject, being here on a Friday morning might not be all that fun, but really appreciate this opportunity. Not only personally, but on behalf of the government that I represent, headed by President Martín Torrijos. And allow me to start by taking you back to 1977. Our hemisphere was marred with uncertainty and tension, yet the United States and Panama were able to come together and demonstrate how two countries, a big one and a small one, could employ dialogue and good faith to provide an exemplary resolution to a conflictive situation. The Torrijos-Carter Canal Treaties in 1977 stand to this day as a model of hemispheric collaboration. In 1999, when we marked the admirable fulfillment of an agreement which culminated with the complete transfer of the Panama Canal to the Republic of Panama, with the canal finally at its disposal, Panama has been able to embark on the first stages of a new national development project, with the canal as one of its cornerstones. Let me tell you a little bit about Panama today. Today, our country stands as one of the most stable nations in our hemisphere, politically, economically, and in terms of security. We have an absolute commitment to democracy, and a democratic and all democratic institutions, and are determined to promote these values in our hemisphere. Our economy is globally competitive. Having the U.S. dollar as our legal tender allows us to boast the lowest inflation rate in the entire region. Upon these strong foundations, we have been able to build a service-based economy with a conglomerate of activities erected around the Panama Canal. This multimodal infrastructure has established Panama as Latin America's most important logistics and transshipment center. Panama's modern port system, perfect complement to the canal, handles over 3 million TEUs per year. MIT, a port facility operated by Stevedoring Services of America, for example, is the busiest and most efficient port in Latin America. And this is only set to increase as port operators are committing over $1.5 billion over the next 2 years to expand and modernize port facilities on both sides of Panama. The Colon Free Trade Zone, located in the Atlantic entrance of the canal, is the largest free zone in the hemisphere and second only to Hong Kong in the entire world. Over $10 billion worth of trade goes through the Colon Free Zone every year. Likewise, Panama's International Financial Center is the largest in Latin America, with 70 banks from 35 countries managing over $40 billion in assets. Our strong banking center is regulated according to the strictest international standards, assuring the free movement of capital, confidentiality, and stability, making it one of the benchmarks in the industry. More recently, tourism and real estate have emerged as new components of the already diversified economy. In addition, Panama has consistently been the main destination for U.S. foreign direct investment in Central America and the Caribbean. All these factors have combined to create a solid, stable, dynamic economy, which has posted real GDP growth rates over 6% for the past 2 years. This period of prosperity has not come without challenges and sacrifice. 2 years ago, our government, under the clear vision and leadership of President Torrijos, embarked on a process of reforms that would pave the way for a coherent project of national development. Beginning with the constitutional reform in 2004, our national constitution was amended to provide greater degrees of public transparency and accountability. As a matter of fact, the first act of the Torrijos administration was to implement the Freedom of Information Act, which was a first in the region. The constitutional reform was followed by a fiscal reform, which was needed to provide the sustainability for any development project. This fiscal reform has contributed considerably to reduce our fiscal deficit, which we aim to have it at a balance by the year 2009. But perhaps the most challenging aspect of the reform process was the reform to our social security system. As you can imagine, with all the discussions being taking place here over Social Security, this reform was extremely unpopular, as all Panamanians will have to engage in a process of common sacrifice. However, to put it in the words of President Torrijos, it is necessary to sacrifice popularity for responsibility in an issue like the Social Security reform. This sacrifice, however, was indeed necessary to provide solvency to an obsolete social security system which would have otherwise collapsed in the short term. Having set our house in order, we are now in a position where we can shift our focus to long-term development with the canal as the main driver for this sustainable growth. The reform process has allowed us to articulate a long-term national development plan that goes beyond the canal. We are now at a position where we can exploit further our most important asset, which is our geographic position, and put it at the service of a development plan that aims to include the large percentage of Panamanians who have been left behind in the past, therefore generating intolerable levels of poverty in an otherwise prosperous country. With this, we feel that Panama stands on the verge of becoming one of the world's great trade and commercial centers, with a multimodal logistics infrastructure complementing the world's most important waterway. Let me talk a little bit about the Panama Canal expansion as part of this component. Today, the canal is being operated in a more efficient, more profitable, more dependable, and in a safer way than ever before. In 2004, the canal saw the fewest accidents it had seen in 81 years, with only 10 minor accidents in almost 14,000 transits. Canal water time decreased 20% from close to 33 hours in 1999 to a little over 26 hours of transit per vessel today. In 6 years under the Panamanian administration, the canal has contributed more to the Panamanian treasury than in 87 previous years combined, contributing directly to the well-being of all Panamanians. These achievements have been accompanied by a continuous modernization process, which has, since 1996, represented investments of way over $1.2 billion. Nevertheless, the canal is nearing its maximum capacity. The challenging realities of global maritime trade, fueled by the accelerated increase in the Asian trading activity, have left the canal hard-pressed to accommodate a rapidly growing demand, as well as a new generation of post-Panamax ships, which can not fit through its existing lock system. At the current rate, the canal will reach its maximum capacity by the year 2012. Provided that Panamax vessels are the largest that can transit through the existing canal locks, global demand is currently shifting towards post-Panamax vessels. Post-Panamax container ships are able to hold up to 12,000 TEUs, as opposed to a Panamax ship, which can only carry 4,500 TEUs. These factors have led the Panamanian administration of the Panama Canal under the Panama Canal Authority to evaluate the best course of action that will guarantee the continued viability and competitiveness of the canal. Only a few weeks ago, the Panama Canal Authority presented to President Torrijos a proposal to expand the Panama Canal. Following years of studies by top national and international experts from around the world, which produced more than 120 studies and a total of over 55,000 pages of studies at a cost of over $40 million, it has been concluded that a third set of locks was the most economically, environmentally, and socially responsible alternative to guarantee the future viability of the waterway. As our Constitution demands, the question of the expansion has to be put to a national referendum where the people of Panama will make use of the democratic process to decide whether or not Panama will embark on the most significant project in its history. And let me make an emphasis on this, because this is the first time in our history that it is the Panamanian people and the Panamanian people alone who will make a decision over the future of this strategic asset for Panama. If approved, the expansion would take 8 years to complete at a cost of approximately $5.25 billion. The project will be entirely self-financed by the Panama Canal Authority and would be paid for by the users with a combination of gradual toll increases, and let me underline gradual and reasonable toll increases, and a portion of a short-term international financing to be repaid with future toll revenues and to be repaid in a short period of time. This project will in no way, shape, or form add to Panama's sovereign debt, nor will it count with any sovereign guarantee. The project consists of three main components. One, a third set of locks with post-Panamax capacity. Two, construction of access channels to the new locks, as well as the expansion of the, and deepening of the existing channels. Three, the elevation of the maximum level of the Gatun Lake. Upon completion, this third set of locks would be the largest ever to be built. Like the original set of locks, the new locks would work with water flowing by gravity with no need for pumps. Nevertheless, innovation will include a water-saving basin system, as you can see in the projection, which will reuse 60% of the water in each transit. Therefore, even though it's a bigger lock with more water volume, it would use up 7% less water than the existing smaller locks. The new lock chambers will be able to transit post-Panamax container ships that are 1,200 feet long, 160 feet wide, and have a 50 feet draft. To put it into perspective, this is the equivalent of four football fields in length, 1.5 in width, and 5 stories deep. Studies have projected that an expanded canal will have the capacity for twice the tonnage as the current canal. Though the expansion of the canal would be perhaps the most ambitious project in our national history, it is but a component of a broader national development strategy. The Panama Canal Authority believes that benefits of the canal expansion will not only come from direct income generated by the waterway, but also from the entire conglomerate's economic activity level. It is estimated that the canal expansion will allow the canal economic system exports to be tripled by the year 2025. Additionally, the canal expansion will stimulate a 40% increase in the rest of the conglomerate's investments, which will rise to $1.1 billion per year by the year 2025. Additionally, studies related to the proposed expansion indicate that annual economic growth in the case of an expanded canal will average 1.2 additional percentage points in comparison with the Panamanian economy without the expansion alternative. I also wish to clearly state that this project will be handled exclusively by the Panama Canal Authority, which has proven that it has the capacity, it has a great track record to support it, it has demonstrated its professionalism, transparency, and competence, not only to operate the canal, but to carry out an ambitious project like this. Now let me touch upon something that I know that is a very important subject to all of you, and is the security aspects. Strategic geographic location has, throughout our history, placed us in the forefront of hemispheric security considerations. General Craddock of the U.S. Southern Command spoke through when he said that Panama's strategic location has long defined its role in world affairs. As the biggest transshipment hub in Latin America, few countries can do more towards hemispheric security than Panama, be it the illegal traffic of drugs, weapons, or persons. Panama works hand in hand with the neighbors to reinforce the security of our hemisphere. For example, this year, the Panamax exercises, a multinational counterterrorism exercise simulating the defense of the canal from terrorist attacks, will count with the participation of 24 countries, something never seen in our hemisphere in terms of cooperation with regards to security. For containers and port security to narco-terrorism and money laundering, Panama has made tremendous strides over the past years to enhance hemispheric security. For instance, Operation Panama Express has seized 380 metric tons of North American-bound cocaine since 2000. Perhaps no other country can do more to stem the flow of narcotics from South America, as all narcotics must pass somehow in the region close to Panama's lands, air, or sea. Last but not least, it's important to keep in mind the fact that the neutrality of the canals, as guaranteed by the Torrijos-Carter treaties, so that both in time of peace and in time of war, it shall remain secure and open to peaceful transits by the vessels of all nations on terms of entire equality, so that there will be no discrimination against any nation. And to conclude, let me tell you that Panama welcomes the challenges of the 21st century. We will not be content to settle for what we have already accomplished. Instead, through a comprehensive plan for national development, we wish to make true our vision that Panama will become the first Latin American country to make the leap on the development ladder to the first world. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Vice President. Vice President Lewis has very graciously agreed to take questions from the audience. If you would please raise your hand, and when you get the microphone, identify yourself and the affiliation you have before asking your question. Thank you very much. The floor is open. Miss.
Hi, Jennifer Simon, Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Is it known when the referendum will be held?
The answer is we don't have a date yet, but this will allow me to explain a little bit about the process. And it is a four-stage process. The first one was for the Canal Authority Board to agree on a project and in its entirety. And this took place April 24th, when it was then delivered to the executive branch when the project was delivered to President Torrijos. This requires now that the executive branch, through the cabinet, approves a law or a proyecto de ley, a proposed law, to take it on to the legislative, which is a third level of approval. This has not happened. At this stage, the executive branch has opened a wide discussion, putting forward all the information to the Panamanian people before it's actually taken from the cabinet to the legislative. Once that happens, and the legislative discusses it and create a law to call for the referendum, then a period of 90 days has to go by where the public discussion will be absolutely open and absolutely transparent before the actual referendum. As expected, the times are open until the Panamanian people feel that they are fully educated on the subject and that we are in a position to carry out a referendum. So we cannot set a date on it yet, but we're moving along in the process.
Good morning. Deborah Pierce from Development Finance International Incorporated. The widening and dredging of Lake Gambon should be a truly formidable task that will be over 15 feet deeper. I think it's around 35 feet now. How could you explain a little bit more about where the silt will go and how that process is going to happen?
Well, as you can imagine, in the 55,000 pages of studies, there's substantial information on the specifics of where the dredge material will go. There are several possibilities. One of them is that they'll be stored in areas that have been used in the past or that were used in the past as firing ranges by the U.S. forces stationed in Panama. There's also the possibility that part of it be used to create further infrastructure and port facilities in the Pacific, as well as the possibility of utilizing it to make viable some landfill projects that are being in the drawing board in Panama today. But this is all part of getting the canal capacity up to where it can really be competitive in the long term. But there's a lot of information in the studies that are available through the Panama Canal Authority website today.
I'd like to ask a question, Mr. Vice President. The Panama Canal watershed area is one of the most sensitive environmental areas of the country. The watershed is of course, crucial for the functioning of the canal. What is seen to be the environmental impact of the construction of the new locks and the work that needs to be done to widen the canal?
In my view, the water supply for the expanded canal has been the most challenging issue in terms of engineering. As you all know, the canal operates all on fresh water that flows by gravity down to the ocean. Today, 52 million gallons of water flow down in every transit. So the engineers and the studies focused on how to make how to put together a project that would be environmentally responsible, socially responsible, and at the same time provide the quantity of water required. At the very beginning, there was a theory that the only way that that could happen was by flooding some areas adjacent to the existing lakes and to the canal. But in reality, this theory would have rendered the canal unviable in social terms and in environmental terms. So they set out to find a system by which we could get the water, we could reduce the amount of water utilized for the expansion, and would not require any flooding. And this system is based on those side basins. It's a technology already in use in Germany. There is a couple of us already operating in Germany, by which you reutilize 60% of the water that goes into the chambers. This will then have this bigger chambers utilize 7% less water than the existing chambers. And the way to supply that additional water has been obtained by just raising the level of the existing lake with no damage to the environment and with no social considerations of displacing people from their homelands by raising it 3 feet. This will, together with the dredging, lowering the lower level of the existing channels, this will give all the water required for this new chambers to operate at 100% capacity.
Bill Price, I guess I would identify myself as a former canal treaty negotiator. And before the question, I just wanted to say how outstanding it is that Panama has done so well with the canal. And a lot of people way back when didn't think that would happen. And I think you can be very, very proud of how well the canal works. My question is, I think I heard you say that the new project would not involve increasing Panama's sovereign debt. If I heard correctly, I assume that means that the Panama Canal Authority will have such a reputation for running things well that the authority itself will be able to arrange whatever financing is correct. Is that correct?
That is correct, Bill. First of all, let me thank you for those comments. As you know, we've all had a lot at stake in making sure that what we did in the 70s was the right thing to do. And I think that these 6 years have proven that it was not only the right thing to do, but that there was no other way to do it. And there was no other way in which we could have strengthened this great partnership that our two countries share today. But that is true. One of the prerequisites put to the Canal Authority was that in no way, shape, or form this expansion could put a burden on Panama's public finances. A small country like Panama, after all the sacrifices that we've done, and after a vision of incorporating through public investment, and especially in the social areas, in education, healthcare, infrastructure, basic services like water, electricity, and so on, could not put its own development in these areas at stake on a project that is otherwise commercially viable, financiable, that has a good track record to prove it, and that not being a greenfield project where you are just putting out projections in a screen, where you are just betting on people using it, you have a track record to prove the Panama Canal is the most important trade route in an ever-growing global trade system. So we have all these elements to back a commercially viable, financiable project. And in no way would Panama put its sovereign guarantee behind canal debt. And I think that this has been very well accepted and taken in the financial world, understanding the capabilities of the canal, the projections of world trade, and its capacity for repaying. And the way it's been presented to the Panamanian people is a project that, although will cost $5.25 billion, it will require a bridge financing for $2.5 billion. The rest comes from internal cash flow of the canal itself and the gradual increase in tolls that, as presented, is not only reasonable but very conservative. As presented, it would mean that the canal tolls would double in 20 years. And the truth is that other competing service providers to the canal have raised their rates and tolls and double them in much shorter periods of time. So we feel that not only the projection of toll increases are conservative and very conservative, but also the projections of trade growth and canal utilization are extremely conservative. I'm just coming in from Hamburg, where we visited the port of Hamburg. In just an hour, going through the port, there were five post-Panamax ships docked in Hamburg, all of them going through Suez, although Panama is a shorter route. They have five post-Panamax calls a day and have a projection to increase this year a huge percentage. Their numbers in terms of containers in one of the routes that utilizes the canal, because Hamburg is a great user of the canal, especially on its west coast, South America, to Europe, and some of Northern Asia to Europe, are three times what we are using in terms of our projections for trade. So we feel very comfortable that the numbers presented are very conservative.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Sir?
Hi, Reynaldo Desiree from the Washington Center. I was wondering if you could give a sense of how the expansion of the project of the canal would affect the day-to-day operations, because if I remember correctly, you said it's a 6 to 8 year project of expansion, and I was wondering if there's any sort of impact on the day-to-day operations and how those two would work side by side.
That's a great question, Reynaldo, and because it's hard to imagine that you could keep operating the canal as efficiently and as dependable while building probably one of the largest projects in this type of work. But it is like that. The canal will keep operating just as efficient, because this is all dry excavation, dry construction. It utilizes most of the actual infrastructure that will be connected once it's finished to the rest of the system. So you will keep operating the canal until the very first day that you open the third lane as efficiently, and probably even with more capacity. Because as part of the expansion, as presented, they have a deepening of the both entrances of the canal, starting in the first stages. That will raise the capacity for some ships that, even though the size allows them to go through, they cannot go fully loaded because of the draft. So this will probably be able to increase the capacity of the canal, the existing canal, by 10% as the construction is going on the new set of locks.
Let's see, Matt?
Mary Berger with Washington Trade Daily. I was wondering if you could discuss the status of the U.S.-Panama Free Trade Agreement talks. And I believe that there's an issue related to procurement for the new canal project. That's one of the outstanding issues in the negotiations. Thank you.
Well, I would characterize the free trade agreement negotiations as to being in the final stages. What that means in terms of time, I cannot put a number on that. But I think that our negotiators have been very efficient in covering most of the issues. As you know, with this type of negotiations, the information as to each specific item being negotiated cannot be put on the table until everything is finalized. But issues of government procurement in general, I think that have been already settled between our negotiators.
Sir? Luis Botello with the International Center for Journalists and a Panamanian. As you know, this is a very large project, Mr. Vice President, and I want to know if there is any, what are the measures the government are taking to ensure the whole bidding process of this project is going to be as transparent as it has apparently been handling right now? And if, in terms of manpower, what are the steps that are going to be taken to make sure Panamanians have some sort of the same playing field to compete with foreign companies?
There are several questions in there, but let me start by saying that, yes, it's a very ambitious project. It's a huge project for a small country, country the size of Panama, with the possibility of putting together this kind of a project is really amazing. But here we have one of the beauties of this project is that on one hand, this is an opportunity for a small country to really push forward in its development process with a service that is needed by the world, with an ever-growing flow of trade. So that's the beauty of the project, that here we have the coincidence of Panama's interest and the interest of the Panamanian people with a project that is needed because of world trade. In terms of the management of the canal, a lot of people had doubts that the Panamanians could manage the canal. And it was the source of a great deal of the discussions at the time, as Bill has been part of these discussions. Well, we've proven to the world that not only we can manage the canal, but we've proven to the world that we can put together a professional team of world-class professionals that have left no doubt whatsoever in this process as to the transparency and the solidity of their contracting system. And I think that putting in doubt now, after having proved to the world our capacities, putting in doubt our capacities to undertake this kind of a project is not only not fair, but there's no grounds to it. The Canal Authority has the capacity today and will do it once approved and if approved in the same transparent way that it's managed their operations and their own modernization program. And the canal has invested over $1.2 billion in this period of time with no questions as to their transparency and their capacity to manage these contracts. In terms of Panamanians' participation, yes, I think that this is a great opportunity for Panamanian companies to compete. And this will be a great opportunity for Panamanian companies to build capacities that will go beyond the canal expansion. Now, great countries have been built out of great projects. And our capacity in Panama, we are absolutely sure that will be built to a level that will allow that Panamanian companies participate together with world-class companies in projects of this nature. And in terms of training of the people, it's been one of the main objectives of the Torrijos administration, not only looking at the possible canal expansion, but what is going on in our country today in terms of investment, in terms of capacity building, to get all our training programs into a coherent training plan. This has been launched recently as a cohesive training and capacitation program to make sure that this prosperity, this growth, and this huge investment flow coming towards Panama today, even before there's any canal work, be taken by the Panamanians to build up our capacity. So I think that this is a great opportunity for a country to really take that leap forward in our way to development.
We'll have one more question, sir.
Thank you. Juan Sosa, U.S. Panama Business Council. First of all, President, I want to commend you for what you're doing, taking the message, visiting countries, and explaining the project. And in that sense, could you share with us what has been the reaction of the government and the shipping community during your recent trip?
Yeah, thank you, Juancho. A constant on the user side, be it countries, be it associations of companies utilizing it, be it the shipping industry. What we've received is, and this is a constant everywhere, a very positive reaction. And what they've all told us is that in every analysis of what's happening with world trade, one of the biggest question marks was, and I guess it still is, what is Panama going to do in order to maintain capacity or otherwise, how is the industry going to handle what could become a bottleneck in world trade? So the fact that Panama has managed the canal the way it's managed it has given a lot of confidence to the world. And the fact that the Canal Authority has, after very deep studies, put forward a proposal to the Panamanian people to increase capacity is viewed with, as a tremendous positive step. And this is a constant, not only here in the U.S., but in Europe, in Asia, and everywhere we've gone. User countries, user companies, users of the service in general. So to answer you, it's very positive.
Mr. Vice President, thank you. Thank you very much for so generously offering your time. It's been a great honor to welcome you here at CSIS. Mr. Ambassador, thank you very much as well for joining us today. It's been a very, very interesting presentation, and we're very grateful to you for it. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming. Thanks, everyone.